Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, callingest calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Taurus, maker of the Raging Hunter and other fine handguns. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Welcome to another segment, episode, if you will, of DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon. That just happens to be me. I've been sitting around a campfire now for quite a few years, and this podcast kind of gives me the opportunity to visit a little bit about some of the past, some of the things we're doing with some very special guests and friends on occasion, and all those kind of things that really kind of make what I get to do fun. I'm one of those people who fortunately can't wait to get up in the morning and go to work. I've loved my job forever. I started out as a wildlife biologist many years ago. I always seemed to be a writer and got into outdoor television, as a lot of you know, a long time ago. Had my own shows over the years, co-hosted a lot of others, and finally kind of got out of the TV show business, with the exception of now I'm doing some shows, about 5 or 6 a year, with Trigicon's World of Sports and Field that's produced by Safari Classics. We recently had Dave Fulson on. Dave is one of the primaries in Safari Classics and also a very, very dear friend and somebody I work with very closely at Dallas Far Club, DSC. And both Dave and I sit on the DSC Foundation Board, which is kind of the granting arm of DSC. As Tim Fallon, our president, likes to say, we've got the best job in the world. We find ways to raise money so that we can give away money, so we can raise more money, so we can give away more money to worthwhile wildlife conservation education projects scattered throughout the world. We just finished our first set of grantings for 2021. By the time you have a chance to listen to this podcast, we'll be working on our second round of grantings. And some of those grants went to Africa, where they're problems. There really are problems. We've got some things kind of headed our way that we're hoping through the efforts of DSC and DSC Foundation. And of course, some of are many other organizations that are out there that are kind of brothers and sisters, if you will, of DSC, and very supportive of how DSC handles things to try to prevent those things from occurring here in the U.S. And if you're interested in hunting and the outdoors and the outdoor tradition and the outdoor family tradition, may I suggest that you please become a member of DSC. And you can do so by going to www.biggame.org. And there's a phone number there and a website, of course, is there. And from that website, you can find out who the numbers are or what the numbers are so that you can get in touch with Nate Watson, who's in charge of membership. And there's a list there, too, of the different chapters that we have across the continent, and looking for more chapters all the time as well, too, for DSC. We've got Carson Keyes that handles that as well, too. And of course, you can get in touch with Carson as well through the website. And I strongly suggest that you do so. That we've got some really weird, bad things kind of headed our way. And we need the membership. We need your participation. We need your supportive advocacy for hunting rights and wildlife conservation. And there's no better way to do it. I'll repeat it. There's no better way to do that than being a member of DSC. And there also you can remain very informed of what's going on. We've got Corey Mason as our executive director of DSC, and as of now, also the director of the DSC Foundation, to where we're really kind of working together closely hand in hand as we have been, but now we're doing it under one executive directorship, and I'm absolutely thrilled with that. Of course, Corey comes on periodically here with the podcast and tells us kind of what's going on, and occasionally we get to tell a fun story as well, too. So, looking forward to some more victories in the outdoor field so that we can spend a little bit more telling about some of the fun stories. I know Corey loves mule deer hunting, a bunch of the others, and he and his family just got back from Africa not too long ago, and Miss Kate and his wife, Miss Karen, and they had an absolute great time. And here in the next several weeks, we'll try to get them back on because I really want them to tell us about the adventure that they had in Africa hunting, I believe it was in Namibia or South Africa. So we'll clarify that and get their stories here before too very long. But heading into the end of the fall as we are, there are several seasons that are open now and some that will be opening very, very, very soon if they're not already open, as I mentioned. Archery seasons are open a lot of different places. Some of the elk hunts are open. Some of the sheep hunts have been going on for a while. Pronghorn antelope hunts. I've got a pronghorn hunt coming up here for too very long that I'm really looking forward to that we'll tell you all about a little bit later, but it is on the Eason Ranch in the central part of New Mexico. And it is with a gentleman who was given the hunt by the buyer of that particular hunt at the DSC Foundation gala that we had, back in July, in support of conservation, wildlife conservation. So we'll have that hunt coming up. And then, two, I've got a hunt coming up very similarly the same way on the Mescalero Apache Reservation. That particular chunk of country has some of the most fantastic elk you can ever imagine, kind of in the southern part of the central part of New Mexico. They've been under a strict management program for the last bunch of years regarding elk, and the bulls that they produce are absolutely huge. Now, through Russell Stacy, who serves both on the DSC and DSC Foundation Board, and beyond all that, it's been a long time, dear friend, Russell was able to procure permits. Now, to get a permit on the Mescalero to hunt a trophy bull, you almost have to kind of be born into it or been involved with them a long time, because there's a huge waiting list. And the only way to get on that waiting list is to get off that waiting list is for somebody to, as my old friend Sheriff Jim Wilson says, to step on a cloud kind of thing and disappear from the face of the earth. And so we were fortunate in that Russell, through the efforts of some other people involved, was able to put together this hunt for us. And the buyer is going to get to hunt a trophy bull, and I'm going to get to hunt a management bull. And I am really, really looking forward to that. And, of course, we'll bring a little bit about that to you once we do the hunt and tell you all about the hunt. Maybe do some interviews while we're there as well, too, with some of the people involved with the Mescalero who do such a fantastic job when it comes to managing that area for elk, but also for mule deer and turkey and black bear, and of course a great variety of non-game species included. That's all coming up in the future, and I hope you'll be right here with us on DSC's Campfires as we go into that. Do have to mention too, though, that both the antelope hunt and the elk hunt are going to be filmed for Trigicon's World of Sports Appeal, which happens to air on Sportsman Channel, is produced by Safari Classics, and thankfully we'll have cameramen with our hunters and with me, and we'll see how all that plays out, and you'll get to see those hunts in the future on TV as well. And of course, I know I'm going to be writing about them in the pages of DSC Game Trails and on internationalsportsman.com, and of course also probably on Trigicon's Hunt and several other blog places where I write. So be looking for those as we head forward. Back to during the summertime, I had the opportunity to do something that I've been wanting to do for a long time, and that was to fish for a big alligator gar with Chris Moody with the Gar Fishing Addictions. Something that I'd set up several months ago, because as I mentioned, I've been wanting to catch a big alligator gar. To me, a big alligator gar is one of those that's 6 feet long, approaches 100 pounds, and all that said, I know they get bigger. While we were on the trip, a day trip that I took my daughter, Teresa Tigret, to fish with me, we filmed a segment for A Sportsman's Life. Now, for those of you who are aware of it, you can go to A Sportsman's Life on our YouTube pages and look up the episode, and it will show you what I'm about to tell you a little bit about regarding that gar fishing trip. The unfortunate thing about all that trip was is that when we got finished, I sat down with Chris Moody and did an absolutely fantastic interview for here for the Campfires podcast. And oh, foolishly, rather than sending it electronically like I normally do to David Fox, who does the production work for me for the podcast, and of course I always appreciate the fact that David opens a show for us, but in sending it to David, I got a reply back from him. I sent it through the Postal Service, which I've done a time or two in the past, but I got a reply back from him to an email saying, "Larry, I got the SD card, but it looks like somebody stomped it in the mud, and it's nothing there is recoverable." So unfortunately, I had hoped to get together again with Chris Moody and to record a podcast with him personally. And I can tell you, I am going back gar fishing. I am absolutely hooked on that. Fishing for those gar of the size that they are is just nothing short of phenomenal when you hook onto one of those. So I know that in terms with Chris primarily fishes the Trinity River. And as I mentioned, I set this fishing trip up a little while ago. I'd fished with Chris and my old buddy Luke Clayton that I do a lot of things with, including radio and of course the Sportsman's Life as well too with Ian Jeff Rice. On a crappie trip there on Richland Chambers, kind of south, more south, I guess, than anything else of Dallas, Texas. Had the time of my life fishing for crappie. Caught the biggest white crappie and the biggest black crappie I've ever caught. And in many years of fishing for them, both of them were way above 2 pounds. So had a great time there, but I'd been wanting to fish with Chris because of his notoriety as being probably the premier, I'll just go ahead and say it, he is the premier alligator guide fisherman there is in the world when you get right down to it. When the guys from River Monsters decided they wanted to do a show on alligator gar, Chris is who they contacted and fished with and caught some absolutely huge fish. So got enthralled by alligator gars when I was a kid. I remember friends of my granddad back then, they fished a lot with trot lines, and back then too you could use nets, gill nets, and they'd set out gill nets in the Colorado River there close to where I grew up, and they'd catch a whole bunch of different kinds of fish, catfish and, you know, all the like carp and freshwater drum and all kinds of catfish, and then occasionally they'd catch a great big old alligator gar that would, as I remember, it would measure about 6 feet long, you know, or a little bit bigger. Well, I was just absolutely enthralled with it. And the size of those fish and that mouthful of teeth that they have, I could only imagine what it'd be like to catch one on a rod and reel. And so that's something that I wanted to do. And then, you know, over the years, fished for them a little bit, never really caught a whole lot of them, caught some little ones and caught a couple of them actually with a fly rod of all things. And we caught one that was probably about almost 2 feet, 2.5 feet long. And I thought that at the time was the biggest fish that I'd ever caught. But, you know, I always wanted to catch one with a rod and reel. I heard that they fight. I heard that they come out of the water and jump like a tarpon and, you know, all those kind of good things, just fight really, really hard. And so all that kind of led to the fact that I wanted to try to catch a big one. And then several years ago, back when I was living in College Station, the local wildlife biologist, TPWD biologist David Rideout, and I got permission to go onto some property adjoining or where the Navasota River ran through. And there was an oxbow there that was just loaded or seemed to be loaded with bullfrogs. Well, David and I decided he had a little about an 8-foot P row, and we put a car battery in there and a headlight and a light that we could shine and some headlamps. And we got out on this oxbow lake that was probably about 100 yards wide and maybe about 400 yards long, not very deep. And it periodically flooded whenever the Navasota River flooded, which happened quite frequently. We're out there and we've caught a few frogs and gigged a few frogs, and I spotted a big old frog sitting on a log, and I pointed it out to David, and he started kind of slowly paddling over that way not to scare him. And I was using a frog gig that kind of uses like a catcher that's got claws, kind of like claws on each side, and when you hit the frog, it closes in on top of him. And we were easing up there a little bit closer, and about that time, there was something that came to the surface and rolled right next to that little 8-foot P row that was longer than that P-Row was. And thankfully, we saw the scales. Otherwise, we'd have thought it was probably a dadgum big alligator. But we saw the scales, and it was an alligator gar. And to me, there's no doubt this gar obviously was longer than that 8-foot P-Row. How long it was and how big it was, we have no idea. We went back and about a month later, before we get back here to go try to fish it, David took his archery rig, his bow fishing rig, and I carried a fishing rod, and went back in there to that oxbow and looked and fished and tried and did everything. Of course, the flood had come through, so there's a pretty good chance that this big alligator gar had left that area and gone back into the Navasota River. But after seeing that one, I went, oh my goodness, one of these days. Well, one of those days happened down in South Texas, and hooked onto a gar down there. There was a drainage ditch, kind of runs from, the very bottom part of Texas into out into the Gulf. He used to go down there and fish with the guys from Trinity Oaks. They had a property down there that they leased, and had a big old saltwater rig, and I cast out there and in front of a mud spot. You could see that drainage ditch at the deepest part was about 2 feet to 3 feet deep, and a couple spots a little deeper, but there was kind of a mud spot, and I figured there was a gar working it, and I threw it up just stream of it and let that scent of that cut bait kind of roll back into where that fish was. And sure enough, it picked it up and went away and then stopped and picked it up again. And because they have a tendency to just hold that, whatever they eat in their mouth for a while before swallowing it. And finally, I figured out this fish should by then have swallowed it, or at least. So I reeled up slack and I set the hook on this big old saltwater rig. And when I did, it was like I was hooked onto a runaway train. I was fishing from the bank and I was trying to run along the side of the bank, keeping up with it. And I looked down and, I mean, this thing was pulling drag and taking out line a whole lot faster than any I could bring back. And finally, I kind of halfway caught up with it, where still had a little bit of line left on the reel, and started reeling. And adjusted the drag, which was a mistake. I adjusted the drag, tightened the drag, and I mean, this thing was shaking its head and going back and forth, and what a fight. And then finally, you could see the line kind of coming out of the water. And as the line was kind of coming out of the water, all of a sudden this fish jumped out of the water, and it was, without a doubt, one of those 7.5-8 foot alligator gars. I mean, it cleared the water and oh my gosh, it took my breath away, and I was so excited. I was reeling, and when it hit the water, it took off again, going the opposite direction, and it was strong enough to where it broke that somewhat powerful line. Well, oh my gosh, that just made things even worse to me, or better for me, I guess, depending on your perspective, in terms of wanting to catch a big alligator gar. as I mentioned, that opportunity finally came with Chris Moody, with the reputation of being the best alligator gar fisherman in the world. Well, finally, the day in July arrived. Teresa and I spent the night with her sister-in-law and her husband, and we got to where Chris was going to meet us and kind of visit with Chris just a little bit. Got on this specially designed boat that Chris uses for fishing for big gar, and got on the river. And as we did, he was telling us about it. He said, Larry, he said, 2 days ago, he said, we had a gar that I got up to the boat. He said, this gar was well over 8 feet long. He said, but it wasn't hooked very good. And just as I was trying to get the rope around it, because usually what he does is takes makes a loop around with a rope right around the alligator gar, and then cinches it tight right in front of its front, the pectoral fins, and it allows him to control that gar and put it in the boat. He says, I was just in the process of making a loop around the line, and when the head came up, he says, I saw it, and it was just barely hooked. And he said, before I could do anything else, the guard swung his head one more time, and away it went. He said, so we're going to try to fish that area. He said, I'm hoping that gar is still there, because sometimes they do still stay in the same area for a while, or they will stay in the same area for a while. He said, before we do that, though, he said, I want to get you guys used to what we're doing. He said, we'll put out 6 lines. We're using cut bait from a carp. And he said, we'll just kind of let the lines drift out there and have 6 out. There's a float on each one of them. And he said, where we're going to start out fishing. He said, there were a bunch of smaller gar. I said, smaller gar? He said, smaller for most people. He said, they were probably from anywhere from about 4 to maybe 5 feet long. He said, they were in there the other day, and he looked at a graph of his electronics there, and he said, they're still in here, so we're going to start you guys out here, and then we'll, so you know what kind of what to expect, and then we'll go to where this big gar was. Well, we had put the lines out and had 6 lines out. It didn't take long for one of them to take hold, and just about time, according to how doing just exactly what Chris was saying, he was telling us, he said, now they'll pick it up and carry it. And he says, you know, they don't chew their food, they just swallow their food whole. So hopefully by time, you know, we'll let it pick it up a couple of times, and that maybe after that third time, he says, if I feel like there's a potential of hook in the gar, he said, I'll tell you to hook, you know, set the hook really hard as you can, and then reel like crazy. So I wanted Teresa to catch the first gar, and didn't take long, as I mentioned before. Gar picked up a bait and took it out there a little way and stopped and picked it up and carried, you know, then moved on a little bit farther. And about the third time that it did, Chris said, okay, set the hook. Teresa reeled up slack, and with that big old spinning rig, she set the hook. Now, she knows how to fish. She'd been fishing since she's been probably about 4 times she started walking and fishing with me, so she knew what she was doing. And she set the hook and fought that thing probably for about 5 seconds, and obviously the fish had just simply held the bait in its mouth, which they have a tendency to do, and release the bait. So we moved on and fished to the area where this big, huge gar had been hooked and almost landed 2 days ago. And we sat there for a while in the boat, had lines out, and had one or two of them kind of move the bait around, but never really would take it. So finally Chris said, well, let's move on a little bit and let's go to another spot. And of course, all the time he is running his electronics kind of thing and looking to see where these gars are as well too, which really kind of puts them in the right area. And we get a little bit farther on, and sure enough, we set out 6 lines, and immediately one of them gets picked up and carried and picked up and carried and picked up and carried kind of thing. And finally Chris and I said, okay, Teresa, reel up slack and set the hook. And she set that hook, reared back, and guess what? The fight was literally on, and this gar was obviously a sizable gar, looking at how the pole was bending, and for a while it was pulling drag and pulling line out, and so he tightened it up a little bit after a while. She started gaining on the fish, and once you really started putting pressure on it with the drag a little tighter, this fish came out of the water, and I mean, it cleared the water with its tail by a good foot, if not a foot and a half. slinging its head, looking like a, like you've seen the classic tarpon photos of a jumping tarpon, hit the water, came out of the water not quite as far the second time, and after that started kind of wearing down a little bit, and we finally got it up very close to the boat, and okay, Chris said, bring it up here a little bit closer, and he took a rope and put it around the to a loop and created a loop, actually, and dropped it over the alligator guard and put it right back behind the front fins and jerked it tight, and that thing went to fighting again, and he pulled it in, and I looked over at Teresa, and her eyes were big with dismay, and she looked at me and says, oh, my God, Daddy, that thing fought like you cannot believe. And then she looked down again at the guard. She goes, oh, my gracious, that's the biggest fish I have ever caught by far, kind of thing. And she says, oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. So we got some photographs, got some measurements, and got to looking. And for the last several years now, Chris and some of the other guys that fish for gar, which is pretty much a put and release there on that particular river, had been tagged. So we recorded the tag, and Chris will turn it in a little bit later, or has by now, I guess, turned it in to find out where the fish was tagged, who the fisherman was, and also where it was caught, but also to where, how long it was. You know, had, so they'll be able to tell a little bit about growth in a whatever period of time it's been since that fish had been tagged or the last time it's been caught. Well, she was absolutely ecstatic about this huge fish, and she said, okay, Dad, it's your turn. So while I'm sitting there and waiting a little bit farther down, waiting for a cork to take off at a distance, you know, I got thinking about gars, and I remembered something that Luke Clayton had told me. He said, you know, he said, Mother Nature sometimes does not mess with perfection. And what he was referring to is that some of the earliest gar fossils go back about 100 million years to the Cretaceous period. So looking at those fossils as compared to what they are today, there's not a whole lot of difference in those fish. They're pretty much the same. So they still have about 500 teeth, and I mean, they get big, and they're a very unique fish in a way, in that they have a vascularized swim bladder. And really what that means is they have an air bladder that allows them to gulp air. And that's what happens quite often when you're out there, and if you're out where there's water, you'll see this gar rise to the surface, gulp some air and head back in. He may slap the water, but it's a pretty good telltale that if you're fishing for gar, you're in an area where there might be gar. You can tell pretty quickly because almost every gar out there will come up, gulp air, and go back down. And so that's a pretty good indication when you see that. The interesting thing too about gar is they have a what they call ganoid scales. That's G-A-N-O-I-D scales. These are kind of overlapping scales that are very similar to like the enamel of your teeth. Now, one of the interesting things about those scales are is they're real sharp and they're stout. And of course, the bigger the fish, the bigger the scales. And over the years of having looked for Indian artifacts where alligator gar exist, particularly like down along the Rio Grande River and some of the like Colorado River, some of these larger streams that, you know, held alligator gars years ago, a lot of time around those Indian camps, you found gar scales. Now, sometimes I think they were used for ornamentation, but there's also the strong possibility, and it's been stated too, that these larger scales were used for arrow points, for like for points on that were shot from a bow, and for good reason, because they were sharp, they stood up and when hit something, and they could be sharpened to a razor honed edge, if you will. So one of those things that you know, just kind of throw it in the back of your mind, and one of these days somebody says something about arrowheads, you can say, oh yeah, they used to make arrowheads too out of gar scales from years back, particularly years and years ago. I mentioned big gar earlier, and I mentioned one that was well over 8 feet long. Well, there's depending on where you look and who you talk to, there have been some gars that been caught up to 10 feet long, and there's a few gars that have been reputed to have been caught that were even longer than 10 feet. The heaviest, if you look at record type thing, the heaviest one on record taken by any kind of tackle, which actually was taken on a trot line, was a little up to right at 10 feet long and weighed 301 pounds. Now, as I recall, that was probably taken in the Nueces River. And actually, I lied to you. It was 302 pounds, and it came out of the Nueces River there just above where Corpus Christi is. Now, a few years ago, there was one caught by a guide on the Trinity River that was reputedly over 10 feet long. This was back in 1991, and that gar supposedly weighed 365 pounds. Now, that's a big gar. I mean, you talk about a true river monster of a prehistoric age. That's it right there. Now, if you look at one caught, you know, the biggest one caught on a rod and reel, which I suspect in a matter of time, Chris and one of his clients will end up catching a bigger one than this. But there was one caught back in 1951 that's the IGFA All Tackle World Record, if you will, and it was caught in the Rio Grande River here just in Texas, and it weighed 279 pounds. So, you know, to me, anything over approaching that 100 pound is a huge fish. And certainly, I mean, I've caught my biggest bluegill. I'm sorry, biggest blue catfish. Wish it was a bluegill. Probably would have never gotten it in if it was. But my biggest blue catfish that I ever caught was 74 pounds. So part of the deal was I wanted to catch, you know, freshwater fish larger than that. And I will tell you, too, that the alligator gar is arguably, and scientifically, when you get right down to it, the largest freshwater fish in North America. You know, you hear things about the sturgeon up north, and they will get big, but they don't get quite as big nor as heavy as what the alligator gar do. And sturgeon generally have a tendency to go in the salt water for a while and they come back into fresh water. With that said, however, pardon me, with that said, however, I have seen alligator gar, and they do go into brackish water, and they may go into salt water, but it's simply because they're right on the edge, but they spend almost all their time where they can in the minimal part of brackish water, and then, of course, in fresh water. But, you know, you never know. There's got to be some big old gars. Years ago, they used to talk about the biggest gars coming out of the Mississippi River. And for years, those gars were fished out for rough fish, for food. The Ohio River at one time reputedly had some huge, huge alligator gar. And when you get right down to it, some of those areas in the north, they're very few, far in between. And some of those areas where there used to be alligator gars up north, there are probably not any alligator gars there anymore. So Texas is one of those places. I know there's some in Louisiana, and I'm sure all along our coastal areas, and of course influenced by the Mississippi River and then the drainages that go into it. But when you get right down to it, we here in Texas are blessed with garfish. In the past, they were considered kind of a rough fish, but guess what? People are finally starting to realize that, you know, they're a pretty unique kind of fish. And yes, they are good to eat. They have kind of a very white meat that's absolutely delicious. But most of our rivers and drainages now, there are some very strict regulations about catch and release, or only keeping a gar up to a certain size, and you're limited to one gar, maybe two in some areas. And then two, there is a special drawing for a big trophy. I'm talking about those 6'8" or 6'0" beyond gar that you have to have a special permit for, that you have to draw through in Texas through the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. But gars get big, and they get big fairly quickly, and they have fairly rapid growth rate until they get to be about 4 feet long, and then it slows down a little bit. They can live from whatever records they've been able to come up with, and I'm sure by counting annuli on scales and maybe now even some tagging, but they can live up to about 50 years of age. And some of these bigger gars that people were catching, and unfortunately, for a long time, were killing with through bow fishing. I mean, I can see where that'd be a tremendous amount of fun of shooting a big old gar with a bow and arrow. And I know a lot of people that have done it and continue to do it, and I have a lot of friends that have done it. But a lot of those guys now are starting to realize how much fun it is if you can go out with a rod reel and catch that rascal and pull it up and take pictures. Now, because they have that air bladder, they can be out of water for up to almost 2 hours before it affects the effects of being out of water start coming into play. So there's more than ample time to get that fish out of the water, take some absolutely great photographs, do some specific measurements to where you can come up with an idea on weight, or even weigh that gar, tag it if it's not already tagged, and then release it back into the river or the stream or the water or the lake, whatever. And maybe you'll go back in a year or so, or maybe even a few days, and catch that same gar again. Think about how much fun that is, as opposed to shooting one with a bow and having to kill it to, and it's gone at that point. So to me, I'm not much on catch and release when it comes to fishing. I love to eat fish, and as old buddy Jim Zumbo says, I catch and release to pan of hot grease kind of thing, and that's my catch and release. But when it comes to gar fishing, it's a totally different thing. Those old gar are so majestic in so many different ways, and so absolutely gorgeous when you get right down to it, as far as I'm concerned. But got away from my story there for a little bit, and the fact that I actually did catch a gar. We were sitting there, and I watched this float move away, and like I said, I knew that they'd pick it up, hold it in their mouth for a long time, because they don't chew. Even though they have all those teeth, they don't chew. They just hold on to whatever they're going to eat, and they'll eat anything from other fish to frogs to turtles to birds to small mammals. They'll eat just about anything that they can catch long enough to hold in their mouth and swallow. Well, I waited for this fish to pick it up, carried away, stopped there, didn't make a whole lot of movement, then picked up. And about that third time, I looked over at Chris, and Chris goes, I think he may have it. I think he either swallowed it, or I think he's got it far enough back in his mouth so that if you set the hook, you'll catch on to something. He said, now remember, they've got a really, really hard bony type mouth, and it's really tough to set that hook and to catch one. So I did as he said. I kind of reeled down with that rod to get what little bit of slack was on there. He left a little bit, and then I reared back as hard as I could to set that hook. And when I did, oh my God, initially it felt like I'd hooked the bottom. Then the bottom started moving, and it took off, and it went this way, and it went that way, going upstream. And Chris had said when the float went upstream, he said, probably a pretty good fish. He said, because of the fact that he's moving up, or she is moving upstream. Most of the really big gars are females. And incidentally, too, should you ever kill one and decide you want to have caviar out of it, I strongly recommend not doing so, because gar eggs are very toxic and poisonous to humans. But I digress. This fish took off, and I mean, it is pulling, and you can feel that line and that rod where that fish is shaking its head back and forth. And, you know, I'm thankful there's a good steel leader on the line, and that line happens to be a very strong braided line. And I'm hoping that this time this fish is not going to break off. So I'm fighting this fish and fighting this fish, and finally, you can see the line kind of coming out of the water as it's going toward the fish, and the fish kind of is coming up to jump, and it jumps out of the water, and here's this at least 6 foot fish that comes out of the water shaking its head, hits the water so hard it splashes droplets all over the place, goes back down underneath the water, of course, and it's down there, kind of, you can feel it shaking its head, and then it comes back up a little bit. And the whole time I am trying to keep in taut line, trying to gain line where I can. And Chris is starting to maneuver the boat a little bit closer to the fish, and so I'm picking up some line that way and fight this fish for about probably, oh my gosh, it seemed like an hour, but it was probably about 7, 8, maybe 10 minutes. And it starts coming up to the surface again, and it's shaking, and I mean, it is trying, turns around and makes another run, and I'm holding on for dear life, and drag being pulled, and finally get it, fish stops, and I start regaining again, and get it up very close to us where we are, and Chris goes, okay, I'm going to try to put a loop on it, and he gets a loop on it, and we pull this fish out. It takes a while to get onto the boat, pulling him out of the water. And I'm going, oh my gosh, that fish is huge. It's not a 7 or 8 footer, but it is absolutely huge. We'd measured the one my daughter caught, that Teresa had caught, that was over 5 feet long. And this fish was bigger than hers. And so, in the meantime, Teresa's been filming all this for the Sportsman's Life. So as I mentioned, you can go see what we do there as well too. But it just absolutely huge fish, and as we get it out, you can see this fish has been cut by a motor kind of right back behind the skull, and it's grown back, and I mean, looking at the scar that it had, that would probably have killed anything else other than a gar, which tells you how truly tenacious of life they are. Got this gar, and I am just in total awe of this huge fish at my feet. And Chris is working to remove the hook while we've got him lassoed, if you will, and I'm holding on. And this fish settles down, thankfully, fairly quickly. And we get a bunch of pictures of the fish, of me with the fish, and Teresa and me of the fish, and Chris and me of the fish, because I've got a couple of assignments that I'm working on for garfish, and one for fur fishing game, and then another both of them for next year, but the other one for sporting classics that I write for periodically as well too. Or I used to be on staff with a column called The Long Hunter. So we're taking all kinds of photographs and taking measurements, and sure enough, this fish is over 7 feet long, and we take the photographs, as I mentioned, and then we tag this fish before releasing it so that it can go back, and hopefully this coming year or before then, somebody else will catch and release it, and we'll get some really good data, and if not, maybe the good Lord willing, I get to go back in the future. Because before I left, I told Chris, I said, I want at least 2, if not 3 fishing days next year. I said, I need to bring a couple of friends, bring my daughter back, and try to get Corey Mason on a fishing trip here, and my old buddy Dave Fulson as well too wants to come fish, and maybe a couple of other guys. So I told him to reserve several dates. But anyway, get the fish back in the water, and we're sitting there talking. He said, Larry, he said, let's make one more try. He said, we're going to go a little bit farther downstream. He said, there's been some big fish in that area in years past. And sure enough, we get down there, and immediately my daughter hooks into one of them that's probably about a 4-footer, and she gets it right up to the boat. And then since we've already got a 5-footer photographs of, we release the fish. And just a few moments later, there's something on line, and this float moves again upstream, and we go through the process of waiting until Chris thinks this thing is in its mouth or in its stomach. Man, I set the hook, and when I set the hook, it's like setting the hook on the bottom, and I'm going, oh my goodness, this may sure enough be a big one. And I start reeling, and fish start moving around. It's shaking its head and doing all kinds of things, and I'm holding on as it makes a run this way and that way, taking the line off. Chris is maneuvering the boat, and we get it. Oh, gosh, finally get up there where we're probably within about 100 feet or so where this fish is, and somewhere in the water down there below, and I've got taut line. I'm watching this line coming up, and like, oh my gosh, it's going to jump. Get ready, get ready, get ready. It comes out of the water, and this here's easily a 7.5 foot, if not even longer, big bodied gar comes out of the water. I can see the hook and I can see the bait in this fish's mouth, but it's holding on strictly to the bait. As it comes out to the top of the apex of shaking its head like a jump it will make any tarpon truly jealous, that fish opens his mouth, out falls the bait, out falls the hook. It hits the water, and that's the last we saw of that fish. Oh my goodness. But if I hadn't already decided I was going to come back and fish with Chris, when that happened, there was no doubt I was going to. I will tell you this much. Gar fishing is truly addicted. And I understand why he calls his website Gar Fishing Addictions, because it is. It'll get under your skin. There's no other fishing in North America that you can catch that will get as big, and to me will put up as big a fight, and nor is as majestic as one of those gars that's, you know, approach from 5 feet on larger. So if you're into wanting to catch a big, true, fresh American, North American freshwater fish that's huge, you know, it's got to be an alligator gar, as far as I'm concerned. And I will tell you, as I started to, that Chris Moody's schedule fills up very quickly. He fishes primarily from kind of late spring to early fall. He said the best gar fishing is during those summer months, and his schedule fills up really, really quickly. So should you wish to try yourself and see how you do on a monstrous, huge alligator gar that could be 8 feet long or longer, you know, you better get in touch with Chris in a hurry and do so right after you hear this. His dates fill up unbelievably quick. I've got 3 dates reserved, thank goodness, so I'm not concerned about not being able to fish with him next year. But if you want to get in touch with him, and the best way to do that is to go to garfishingaddictions.com. You'll see all of his social media sites from there. You can go from there, and there's also a phone number that you can call Chris and get set up for next year. Alligator gar fishing, I used to get tickled about people saying, oh my gosh, you took me to the gar hole. Well, let me tell you something. I want to go back to that gar hole. I cannot wait until next year to fish for another big alligator gar. Really want to thank y'all for joining us today, and don't forget to visit Chris Moody's website and his social media pages. We're working on a website as well, too, that will be www.larryweissoonoutdoors.com. You can always get in touch with me also on Instagram at Larry Weissoon Outdoors, and then I've got a Facebook page of that same name, too, so would love to hear from you what you think about the podcast and what you think we ought to be talking about in the future. And for right now, we're going to kind of kick some dirt on the coals and tell you we'll be right back here with you next week, and no telling where we're going to go. So appreciate you being with us, and truly look forward to being with us this time again next week. And don't forget to also go to www.biggame.org and become a member of DSC. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Weissoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC Campfires with Larry Weissoon has also been brought to you by the Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. TRHP Outdoors. Kenitrek Boots for the trails less traveled. Boyt, the finest in hunting gear. Pyramid Air for all things air gun. And Ripcord, rescue travel protection.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude.
Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.